Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 30th, 2016. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Branching Out, Mercy Gardens Dig Partners on Three Projects. This was written by Teresa Churchill. Mary's garden, with its colorful sunflowers, zinnias, and petunias, is more than eye candy for motorists on Lakeshore Drive. This is the second season the garden has provided jobs for the disadvantaged, as well as vegetables to feed the needy at the Good Samaritan Inn. Last week, it added a bi-weekly farmers market for HSHS St. Mary's Hospital employees that continues through late September. This so-called community benefit garden is one of three collaborations the Inn's Mercy Gardens Dig program has participated in this year. It's also one of two partnerships the Soup Kitchen inherited from Decatur is Growing Gardeners, which merged with the Good Samaritan's Horticulture Job Training Program 1 year ago. Mary's garden is flourishing, so much so that the Mercy Gardens Dig apprentices, who harvested last Tuesday, wished they had brought more crates. The half dozen or so they had soon overflowed with ripe cantaloupes, watermelons, and cabbages, not to mention armful after armful of romaine lettuce, handfuls of carrots and basil, and pockets full of Brussels sprouts. "This is why I'm wearing cargo shorts," said Andrew Lenard, a full-time apprentice who graduated from Mercy Gardens training this spring. Bob Hill, facilitator in rehabilitation, sports medicine, and athletic care, said St. Mary's Hospital hired Dig, that's D-I-G-G, to manage the garden last year, donated the vegetables to the Good Samaritan Inn, and offered the picturesque setting to Eisenhower High School as a horticultural laboratory for its students. "It's been a wonderful partnership," Hill said. "The garden has helped us put produce into the hands of those in need and helped us educate people, both young and older, about growing their own food. We'd like to continue to expand the project." Dig's involvement with Resource Farms at MRI, formerly known as Macon Resources Incorporated, dates back even further to 2013. Since becoming Mercy Gardens Dig, the job training program offered gardening expertise and labor in exchange for greenhouse space and for floor care at the Good Samaritan Inn, only to discover that the work required by Resource Farms this year was too much for the available workforce, i.e. MRI clients and Mercy Gardens apprentices. Micah Cole, MRI product and services representative, said because clients don't like weeding and watering as much as they do planting and harvesting, the plan for next year is to plant less and see if Mercy Gardens can extend the drip irrigation system it installed in part of the garden area and convert the greenhouse to hydroponic growing so that vegetables can be harvested year-round. Quote, "Things didn't go as well as we'd hoped, so we've had to rethink our approach," Cole said. "But the partnership is available and one we plan to continue." Mercy Gardens Digs' newest partnership involves Crossing Healthcare Gardens, planted in May and producing vegetables for 30 of the clinic's patients under a prescription produce program. Apprentices usually harvest Monday and return Tuesday after registered dietitians from Crossing have helped sort the vegetables, plus some fruit from the Central Illinois Food Bank, into individual bags. Representatives from Mercy Gardens then distribute the prescription produce while selling their own vegetables at a farmer's market open to the public. Mercy Gardens Dig will soon add 8 additional trough garden beds and plant a fall crop to be harvested through mid-October. The Crossing Healthcare Garden is funded in part by a $21,000 grant from the United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois. Quote, "It's an amazing partnership that's working well for both of us," said Allison Reha, a Crossing dietitian. Quote, "All we want to do now is expand the garden to reach more patients." The woman behind Mercy Gardens Dig and its gardens near the Good Samaritan Inn is Cindy Jackson, food production manager and Dig's former garden manager. She said the program now employs 8 apprentices, 4 of them full-time, and that nearly 24 people have completed Mercy Gardens training since classes began on March 5, 2015. Jackson said she is particularly gratified to see the prescription produce program having a positive impact on patients, including Bertha Nance, one of Mercy Garden Dig's apprentices and the primary gardener at Crossing Healthcare. "At the market last week, there was a gentleman who came up and said he's lost weight after taking their classes on how to cook the food he is getting," Jackson said. Bertha has seen her numbers come down as well. Mercy Gardens Dig Farmers Market is held from 9 a.m. to noon today and every Tuesday through mid-October. It's located south across the street from Crossing Healthcare, 320 Central Avenue. And for more information, you may call the Good Samaritan Inn at 217-429-1455. There are 2 photographs accompanying the article. One shows Mercy Gardens apprentice Andrew Leonard harvesting romaine lettuce from Mary's Garden at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital. Mr. Leonard has literally a huge, huge armload of lettuce, and the picture is framed with tall sunflowers on left and right, and then in the foreground, flowers which I think must be zinnias of all colors. Then there is a close-up photograph of freshly harvested carrots, red onions, and cherry tomatoes that were harvested from Mary's garden. You can see the good dirt still on the the red onions and the carrots that look really good. It also shows Mr. Leonard unloading Brussels sprouts while picking vegetables with Teresa Williams. Another apprentice, Milton Barbie, is shown working in Mary's gardens. At the moment, he is carrying crates, apparently, on the way to load up some beautiful-looking cantaloupe. Also on page one, we find this article. Council moves to stifle spread of video gambling. The article was written by Allison Petty. The Decatur City Council identified several ways Monday to stop the spread of video gambling parlors throughout the city. A majority of council members suggested that they would support capping the number of Class P liquor licenses, which allow for video gambling parlors, and reducing that number over time. They also said they would support distance requirements for new parlors to prevent them from opening in clusters. The council discussed its options during a study session, with votes slated for a future meeting. Quote, "We've never leveled out. We just keep getting more requests," Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. "The only people I've really heard from who are excited about additional Class P licenses are the people who own them. There are currently 79 locations in Decatur with active video gambling licenses, according to information presented by city staff. There are 23 Class P licenses with another 7 applications pending." Council members generally indicated they wanted to cap the number of licenses at 30 and to reduce the number to 20 through attrition. The Class P licenses were created in 2015 because establishments were abusing the Class G licenses awarded to restaurants, said Councilman Jerry Dawson, who is also the city's liquor commissioner. In other business, the council voted to approve bids for street repairs that members previously rejected at the August 1st meeting. The council voted 5-1 to approve the bids of R.W. Duntman for $978,000 in asphalt work and Otto Baum Company for $385,000 in concrete work. The projects are the first to be funded by the city's local motor fuel tax, which took effect in April. Moore Wolf was one of the 4 initial no votes, but she motioned to reconsider the bids. Quote, "I really wanted to get the work done this year," she said. "We've been collecting this money. If it just sits in the bank all winter, it's not doing anybody any good." Funk was the lone no vote. Councilman Bill Faber, who previously voted against the bids, was absent. Funk and Dawson expressed concerns about 3 contractors whose bids were deemed non-responsive by city staff, with their bids not considered. City officials have refused to publicly name those contractors who contacted some council members with their concerns. According to city staff, the contractors failed to meet requirements approved by the council in 2015 that were designed to increase minority participation in public works projects. The goals require that contractors make a good faith effort to ensure minority workers perform at least 18% of the total hours worked on city projects. When the job includes a subcontractor, the goal is for 10% of the total dollar amount to be performed by minority-owned businesses. City staff members clearly outlined the expectations in a pre-bid meeting, City Manager Tim Gleason said after the meeting, expressing, quote, 100% confidence in the staff's work. He said contractors were told that a good faith effort meant contacting three possible minority subcontractors. The ordinance does not require the contractor to hire those subcontractors. Quote, if the contractors decide the subcontractor can't deploy quick enough, just as one example, to be here in time to complete that portion of the work, that's entirely their decision, Gleason said. But hopefully that's signaling to the minority community that there's opportunities in Decatur and they potentially expand those operations in our city or in this area. Funk said he had significant concerns about the city staff's determination of what constitutes good faith and thought the ordinance should include an appeal process for contractors who felt they met the requirements. Quote, we have a financial problem. It doesn't make sense to me to pay more for the same work when we have qualified contractors that have been responsive in their own assessment to pay more for it, he said. It just doesn't make sense, and I don't think it's good policy. Councilwoman Dana Ray said multiple contractors understood and followed the requirements that were outlined by city staff. Those who did not, quote, either were sleeping on the job or just blatantly decided that they were not going to adhere to the rules, she said. Quote, we can't have this going on for every bidding process. We're not going to get any business done, Ray said. Already we have delayed this project for a month because someone doesn't like the hoops that they had to jump through. Several people spoke before the meeting in favor of the minority participation ordinance, including Pat West, chairman of the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce, and the NAACP Decatur branch president Janelle Norman. Quote, you have an opportunity to make the right decision and to send the message that the city of Decatur is open for business for all of its citizens, West told the city council. Council members requested a study session slated for September 6 to receive an overview of the entire bid process, including the retirements of the minority participation ordinance, the requirements, if I misspoke. The council also reviewed a final draft of its goals as presented by city staff. Council members have identified their goals through study session discussions over a period of months, during which time the city also sought input from residents. Gleason said the goals document would be posted on the city's website once it is finalized. On page 3, we find several articles of local interest, beginning with this one under the heading Government and Politics. It was written by Ryan Voiles, and the headline is State Cuts Out Reimbursements for Mandated Autopsies, Coroner Says. The cost for state-mandated autopsies has recently fallen solely on the county that performs it. That was the message that Macon County Coroner Michael E. Day passed on to the county's Finance Committee, which approved a $6,000 increase in appropriations as a result of running short in the office's autopsy medical line. One key issue that Day acknowledged was his office being asked to conduct autopsies on inmates in state facilities per state statute. The state used to reimburse counties for this practice, but the county has not received money for about 7 autopsies dating back to last year. Day did not have an exact amount owed to the county by the state, but each autopsy can cost upward of several thousand dollars. The concern that Day expressed is that the money will never come unless pressure is put on state lawmakers to reverse what has transitioned into an unfunded mandate. The state still doesn't have a full year budget due to the impasse between the governor and General Assembly. Quote, "There is a general consensus that without pressure, they may never reimburse for these autopsies again," he said. That in other business, the committee postponed approval of the county's treasurer's budget over questions about use of technology and maintenance. Overall, the treasurer's budget was cut by $11,721, or 3%, of this year's budget. However, Treasurer Ed Yoder budgeted an increase in automation for $15,000 to help replace 5 computers in his office to be covered by a balanced carryover from the current budget. Committee member Tim Dudley suggested Yoder stagger the computer purchases to lessen the upfront cost, as well to re-examine the need for $4,110 budgeted for office supplies. Quote, "If we're getting new computers, do we really need that much to maintain them?" Dudley asked, adding that there were no maintenance costs budgeted in the current year. The budget will come back to the Finance Committee in a later meeting. And we have more news of dredging on page 3. This headline reads, 2 better than 1. Sand Creek gets multiple dredges. And this was written by Allison Petty. Great Lakes dredge and dock crews have made their way into the Sand Creek area, where 2 small diesel-powered dredges will run 24/7. The dredges, named the Maggie and the Chris L., are located near the bridges at South Shores Drive and Grove Road. The city's contractor is also using a modified backhoe, sometimes called a swamp buggy, to remove lily pads and other debris in the shallow area. Quote, "They couldn't maneuver the big dredge in here," said Jerry Stevens, engineering services coordinator for the city's water management department. "The bridges are not high enough to get under. They have to get a smaller dredge in here that can navigate the area better." Once they're done, the Sand Creek Basin will be about 5 feet deeper, he said. In some areas, the basin is so shallow that the dredge must create a path for crew members to bring materials by boat. The small dredges in Sand Creek will work simultaneously with the company's larger dredge, which is further north in Basin 2. There are now a total of 4 booster stations working to propel the sediment all the way to the 523-acre site in Oakley, where it is stored. So how much smaller are the dredges in Sand Creek? Consider this. The cutter head, the the steel part that stirs up dirt and debris on the lake bottom, is 65 inches in diameter for the dredge in Basin 2. Compare that with the Sand Creek dredges, which have 8-inch and 12-inch diameter cutter heads. Because the smaller dredges are diesel-powered, they'll make more noise than their electric component. Crews will take decibel readings to ensure that the noise does not exceed city specifications, Stevens said. The $91 million dredging project began in fall 2014. Workers so far have completed dredging in Basin 1 and the Big Creek area, as well as increasing the capacity of the sediment storage site. After Basin 3, the crews will continue to Basin 3 and 4. The project is expected to increase Lake Decatur's total capacity by 30% for an additional 52 days of water supply. The location of the dredges can be viewed under Lake Decatur Dredge Location Map on the city's website. On page 3, we also have the briefs column, and here's one of the small articles. Decatur School District will release students after 3 hours of instruction today, Tuesday, due to heat. Students will be dropped off at their normal bus stops. There will be no afternoon pre-kindergarten programs and elementary K through 8 open houses scheduled for Tuesday will be rescheduled. Special education students without a latchkey agreement and pre-K students who do not have an adult present in the home will be released to Harris School on Garfield Avenue. A motorcyclist was injured in Effingham on a Sunday afternoon crash. Illinois State Police District 12's preliminary investigation indicates that a 2008 Harley-Davidson written by Philip C. Voiles, 66, of Shelbyville, was westbound on U.S. 40 at 3:43 p.m., when the motorcycle crossed into the left lane and across County Road 1075 East. Voiles lost control and the motorcycle came to rest near the ditch. Voiles was transported to St. Anthony Hospital in Effingham, and a report on her condition was not available. She was ticketed for improper lane usage. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the August 30th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.